Good day, everybody, and welcome to I think it's our, is it our 24th Dissipation of Glamour discussion. And I'm here in Phoenix at our little University of the Seven Rays headquarters, and so it's a reasonable time of day for a change. I just want to welcome you all from whatever time of day or evening it may be for you, or night, if the case may be. We're going to begin today to focus more on the technique of the presence. This is, in a way, a foundational technique, and I entered first into the technique of light, because that is the technique which we are usually using for the dissipation of glamour. And we have been working through that, and of course we're not finished with it by any means, and we will continue to do the glamour dissipation formula meditations. But behind all that is the technique of the presence. Well, you know, what is the presence? We talk about the insertion into our consciousness of some factor which is not obvious and which lies behind what we usually consider to be our normal reality. The soul itself and those streams of energy and the solar angel behind all that can be considered a presence when it begins to enter into our normal consciousness. It's there, but it's difficult to detect, and it is unusual. But the true presence, if DK is going to deal with it in that way, in this place, comes from the still higher planes. You know, I have the map here in front of us, and the true presence is actually that of the monad itself. Here on the monadic plane, will, wisdom, and activity, of course, with the very essence of the monad, the point of pure being, as the point in the triangle. This is our spirit nature. It's essentially absolutely immortal. It is in its essence pure being, and it is unchangeable throughout the duration of a universe. It really comes from something that underlies the universe altogether. All of us are a ray of the absolute, and really there's only one ray. So we're all the same thing ultimately in terms of being. But some attenuation of that is found in our spirit nature, and it is the presence. So we're likely to begin to detect something which the intuition begins to reveal. And of course, it's going to get stronger and stronger as we go. The descriptions of these things are probably along a little more practical side, but we will begin as we start to approach the third degree, we are told, whenever that may be, whether in lives ahead, whenever, more and more of the sense of the being which underlies all things. And there is an angel, well, there are many angels in a way. The egoic lotus is a group phenomenon, just the way the personality of man is a group phenomenon. And this this part of the solar angel which is infusing emanatively the egoic lotus. See, there are many solar angels within one, or many Agnishvatas within one greater one. There is an infusion of this great being called the solar angel into our egoic lotus. It underlies it. And when it manifests within our egoic lotus, supporting that whole structure. It is called the angel of the presence, and it is the function of that being gradually to reveal, disclose, open the door to the higher presence, which is the pure being within us. Now, we wouldn't necessarily need a solar angel to do that, but in this particular round and on this planet, and due to the moon chain failure, as it is called, we all fell behind where we should be. We should be equal with Venus right now. That is what the Tibetans said. They are, in a way, twin sisters. We should be equal in development to the planet Venus. And we needed the solar angels from the heart of the sun for the opening of the planetary heart here, to draw things together more rapidly because of the delay in the schedule. You know, our planetary logos has a space-time schedule, we're called, and we're told, and it requires group initiation to fulfill that schedule, and the presence of the angels to draw the higher and the lower part of man together more rapidly. So we have an infusion of this great being called the solar angel within our egoic lotus, and when that infusion occurs, it's called the angel of the presence, and it opens the door to the sense of the one, the one. The presence is the one, and it's truly begun to be felt and appreciated due to energy streams coming from the cosmic ethers here. So, you know, we're not full monads in terms of our consciousness, but we're beginning to get some monadic infusion, some monadic influence, and that monad is the presence, and the angel, that part of the solar angel which is within our apparatus, does all it can, at least this is how I understand it, to, when the time is right, reveal the presence. So we're dealing somewhat with the first aspect of divinity rather than the second. The angel is involved in the second aspect of divinity within our egoic lotus, and it helps to reveal increasingly the first aspect of divinity. Now, this is not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen in just one incarnation. It takes a number of incarnations for these things to really become real to us, and we have to go through initiation after initiation until finally at the sixth initiation we are as fully we are very fully identified as that presence. We are identified as that presence. We know ourselves to be that presence, but right now in our own particular state, you know, we are mostly initiates of the first and second degree, let us say, and we are reaching up towards a more holistic appreciation of the nature of reality. Our big problem is, and we can see it, you know, humanity at this time is fighting for its soul. It's the world wars, the Tibetans said, were battles between the angel of humanity, the soul of humanity, and its personality. And it goes up and down, and sometimes the soul asserts itself, and sometimes the personality fights back. We're in a period of very, very strong contest all over the world between the soul and personality of humanity, and we must not let the personality run amok as it would tend to do, reasserting and grabbing its own prerogatives and its own ancient rights and warding off the beneficent presence of the soul. Now, it's not just a question of the American election, which is having a global impact and will have a global impact. It's hard to say which way that will go, but that's all part of a much greater battle. Now, in our various nations, we have to fight it out so that we can do those things which help the soul of our nation emerge against the separative personality pressures. This whole idea of separativeness that we've been working on is really the great illusion. Of course, it translates itself into a glamour and into emotional activities and into physical actions as a result of those emotional tendencies. But the whole problem of illusion is based upon fragmentation and separation. You know, when you are a full monad at the sixth or seventh initiation, at least on the cosmic physical plane, you're not seeing things in a separative manner whatsoever. All the fragmentation is over, and the sense of the other as a reality is going to end. There's only one being, even though there are many, many apparent divisions of that one being that have to learn how to work in harmony according to the divine plan, under the divine purpose. And more we will begin to see this. But when we can begin to eliminate the sense of separativeness, of fragmentation in our lives, we'll be coming closer and closer to overcoming illusion. And that's basically what this technique of the presence is all about, the ability to overcome illusion. Now, we cannot say that, you know, we're going to necessarily succeed immediately in that, and we'll certainly keep up our work on the glamour side of it, because that's where we can be immediately effective using energies which are more within our control. But it's also necessary, as we build the Anta-Karana, to come in touch with the intuition. And the intuition will of the Buddhic plane here, and it will begin to reveal the presence. It's in harmony, really, with the monadic plane, you know, 2, 4, and 6. You know, we're working largely on the emotional plane. We begin to, through the Anta-Karana, to touch the Buddhic plane, and it is resonant with the monadic level. And of course, that goes on and on until we touch the plane of true love, at least for us, which is the cosmic astral plane. So we have to not see the world in terms of fragments, and every lower ego is a fragment. You know, people think they are separate individuals, and that is true in actuality, but it's not true in reality. It's a temporary state, and one day they will see all of these apparent lower egos, the I am thing, as part of one great being that we all are, each of us in a way representing and expressing different energies. But that holism, that unity, that sense of being together, the sense of being one humanity, the sons of men are one, right, is distant, still distant from the mass of human beings. And right now in the world, I think it's fair to say that the personality of humanity is reasserting itself. And of course, you well know that the counterforce, or the lords of materialism, or the lords of form, or sometimes dramatically or melodramatically called the Black Lodge, they don't work with the soul of man. They don't work with the sense of unity. They work with the personality and the sense of separativeness, and they work with the idea that every little fragment must assert itself against every other fragment, and so there's constant friction, and some will rise, some will fall, and eventually only one will be on top. It's an exact inversion of how the Lord of the world works, in which he is within all of us, as the 17th chapter of John in the Bible dealing with identification as that expresses. So it's an inversion, you know, it's a lower reflection. And this idea of being number one is different from being the one. So we have to work towards realizing ourselves through the intuition, and with a slight touch of the monad, that we are the one, and then we can dispel the illusion of fragmentation, the illusion of separativeness. And of course, working on that is not easy, and the Tibetan has given us some techniques to deal with that. So I'm going to begin a little bit here. We're still going to continue our meditation with hatred and separativeness because, you know, look, in our country, at least in the United States, people are being chosen to fulfill certain functions within the government. The quality of the people, of course, is very important, and the general leaning will be towards, not towards internationalism, which is an eventual and desirable goal, but towards America first. And, you know, it reminds me a bit like Deutschland über alles, you know, I mean, Germany first. Anytime the lower ego of a nation asserts itself and says, we're number one, you've got a problem, you know. So under this America first mantra, the world could have a problem. Anytime you try to reassert and regather and reacquire a real or imagined former glory, you are in trouble. Japan tried to do it, Italy tried to do it, Germany tried to do it. Wherever the Black Lodge is working, there is an attempt to do this, and we have to remember that there is a triangle of the influence of the Black Lodge, and one of them is anchored in the United States. Another somewhere in Central Europe, he doesn't specify where, and another is focused in the Middle East, in this whole Palestine-Israel conflict and in the larger area of the Middle East. So, you know, we have a battle on our hands. There's no way to avoid it, and but we must not give in ourselves to hate. You know, it's easy when we have a certain ideal and we think we're right and we realize that these people are working against the welfare of humanity, at least in our view, to begin to have strongly negative views. We have to guard against that. I'm kind of remembering, a lot of you have seen the Star Wars movie, and I think there was a final Star Wars movie, I can't tell you what, but the evil emperor was trying to get Luke Skywalker to hate, because, you know, he had really good reason to do so, and he noticed the rising of hate within Luke Skywalker, and he said, oh, good, good, you know. Well, this, of course, he won the day in the end, but this, we must not allow this, we must not allow our passions and our convictions to contribute more to the very separativeness that we're trying to combat. Lately, I sent out to some people some idea about a third party. Some people took exception with the author. I've always found him a kind of level-headed author, David Brooks. And I'm not saying that the third party that he conceived was exactly the third party that the Tibetan talked about emerging. But he did say that along the lines of the new group of world servers, a third party would emerge. And I think it's probably worldwide in a way, but it certainly could be in any particular country, and it would be based only on establishing the new age, and it would avoid all kinds of criticism, but in fact would be focused on establishing the new and coming Aquarian civilization. We have to think a lot more about that, and I think that idea is beginning to dawn in the consciousness of people, because it's certainly necessary. We can't have bipolarity going on forever. But as we learn to overcome fragmentation and separativeness, and as we learn to access the intuition, the tendency will be more and more to have the out-acting, the expression of a unitive party based upon our more upon our divine nature and upon the themes of service and helpfulness and the good of all, and that's what we're looking for. Okay. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm not. We'll have some discussion in just a little bit. I'll at least start the ball rolling here with this. So here we are. This is basically maybe the second page of the document that I've been working from, and it starts on page 172, and we'll just get into it a little bit, and we'll be studying it over the weeks. And I have a meditation actually on the technique of the presence. DK gave something for that and adapted it. But I think that in these very practical days when choices are being made about who will be in positions of authority, I mean, you know, just imagine Attorney General, Secretary of State. These are important important posts, not only for the country of the United States, but for international relations in general. We'll continue to work with the technique of light and the glamour of hatred and separativeness, and maybe we'll find a way also to do a little work on the technique of the presence meditation, but only after we understand it a bit more. And it's not necessarily easy to understand, okay? It's because it deals with aspects of our nature which have not yet fully instantiated themselves in our consciousness, but we are on the way. So a little bit here, and then we can have a discussion about this little preamble that I gave, anything you've been thinking about in relation to glamour and illusion, and whatever here we manage to read. The technique of the presence, okay. As we enter upon our consideration of this subject, let me just, in case I have to write something, just get one of these little brackets. And, yeah, okay. The student has three things to bear in mind. The existence of the intuition. Okay, now if you ever want to know what the intuition really is, it's not a psychic hunch. And just go to the beginning of the book, Glamour World Problem. Maybe we will do that. And we will discuss what the intuition really is. It's much different from the way we popularly use the word. It has everything to do with the apprehension of oneness and with divine love. It's much greater thing than just, I knew that would happen, or I think this will happen, or that will happen. Those are more in the realms of psychism. Okay, so we have three things to bear in mind. The existence of the intuition, the fact of illusion. Well, from a certain perspective, the whole universe is an illusion, okay? But when we use that word illusion, we're getting much more specific, and we mean that we cannot apprehend reality. Some factor within the mind, some tendency in our thought, not just our feeling, but in the way we think, and in the fragmented mode of our thinking and its usual separative tendencies in the world of thought, prevent us from apprehending reality. There are various definitions of illusion, and we will, you know, go into some of them. The existence of the intuition, the fact of illusion, and the overshadowing presence. And I discussed what that, at least in my view, is. It's ultimately the pure being which we are, and it is ultimately the core of the monad, or for practical purposes, the monad itself. This presence is revealed by the intuition through the medium of the angel, you see, in a way incarnated within the egoic lotus, and when revealed and recognized, brings illusion to an end. Now that is such an important event, and we may think that if we take the third initiation, illusion will be brought to the end, but it won't be. It'll just be some of the most severe aspects of it will be brought to an end. We may think that if the sixth initiation of Chohanship is taken, that all illusion will end. But no, just the illusions that are encountered on the lower five Brahmic planes, you know, from Atma on down, those illusions will be conquered. And DK has said somewhere that only when we take the ninth initiation, you know, which is so remote and way ahead of the Christ and all that, then illusion comes to an end, because we refuse any more involvement with the cosmic physical plane. And basically what he's saying is that the things that go on the cosmic physical plane tend towards illusion. It's a realm of illusion, but from a cosmic perspective. Those things are so high, we just have to know about them academically, but we don't have to worry about them practically. So we have three things to bear in mind. The intuition exists. Do we really have access to the intuition? Only if we really build the Antikarana, does the true intelligent intuition come in? The fact of illusion, we always have to deal with it when we're on the cosmic physical plane, and the overshadowing presence. At first, the solar angel in a way, but the presence is really more our fundamental being, our true identity, if you will. The story of illusion is one which must not be confounded with glamour, although they do intermix greatly, and some of our illusions settle down onto the astral plane and do become glamorous, you know, and then you have a double whammy. It's even more difficult to deal with. Illusion is related to the whole process of revelation. Now, you know, we have to really think carefully as we hear these words because they, you know, they are deep and their meaning is not obvious at first. Revelation, of course, is the whole process operative during the progress through the initiations, the revelation of more and more and reality, and at first we just don't see it as it is. Glamour can be and often is related to the distortion, and that's such an important word. You know, I often use the example of the funhouse mirror. You go in front of those crazy bent mirrors, and your head looks as big as your body, and you know it's all distorted out of proportion. So glamour can be and often is related to the distortion of that which has been revealed. Okay, so something has come down, and there's an apparatus within our mechanism which takes the purity of that which is revealed and twists it out of proportion until we no longer recognize the true reality behind the distortion. But it must be borne in mind that illusion is primarily concerned with the reaction of the mind to the unfolding revelation. Now, from the higher sources comes the unfolding revelation, but our mind tends to be a factor within us which cannot grasp at first the whole of what is revealed and confines the revelation to the terms to which we are accustomed, and therefore limits it and divides it and cuts it into two pieces, fragments it, you might say. So illusion is primarily concerned with the reaction of the mind to the unfolding revelation as the soul registers it and seeks to impress it on the highest aspect of the personal lower self. And what is that highest aspect of the personal lower self? It's obviously the lower mind. So if we could, you know, in our meditation, and DK deplored the fact that we could not really enter into the causal body, enter into the soul, and meditate as a soul, we would be far less subject to the illusions, the fragmentations, the exaggerations and minimizations that the lower mind enforces upon the impression which is coming from the soul. So more and more we really have to learn how to be souls, identify as souls, meditate as souls, and even learn how to transcend that state and begin meditating within the spiritual triad, which the masters of the wisdom, of course, can do because that is their customary habitat. Illusion is therefore, you know, these are just preliminary statements, and, you know, we want to ground them in our understanding. Illusion is therefore the failure of the mind correctly to register, to interpret, to translate that which has been transmitted from a higher source, right? And it is consequently a sin, if you care for that word, of the intelligent and the highly developed people, of those who stand on the path and who are in the process of becoming rightly oriented. And from what he says here, I think we can see that we are all guilty of this particular sin. We are not free of illusion, not by any means. Let me repeat that, and let us try to bring that deeply into our consciousness. Illusion is, therefore, the failure of the mind, namely the lower mind, correctly to register, You know, the image gets all fragmented. The sun is one, but when there's many choppy waves on the water, you see many, many suns, and the image is all broken up in the choppiness of the water. But when you have the still calm on the water, whether it's a pool or the ocean, then the sun is precisely reflected without fragmentation. Illusion is therefore the failure of the mind correctly to register, to interpret, or translate that which has been transmitted from the soul and above, and it is consequently a sin, if you care for that word, of the intelligent and highly developed people, of those who stand on the path and who are in process of becoming rightly oriented, facing, you know, orientation. Right orientation will lead us towards the great sun within our nature, and eventually towards the central spiritual sun, which is the monad within our nature. It is also a sin of accepted disciples. Now remember, these are people between the first and second initiation, largely, as they seek to expand their consciousness in response to soul contact. So, you know, a discipleship is ruled by two planets, particularly Mercury and Saturn. They're both of them strongly mental planets, and together they can be very fragmenting, if you will. They can take the whole world apart in parts and pieces and not see the whole. Eventually, of course, they do. So even accepted disciples, and that's who DK was working with in his group, are subject to illusion, especially when they have, quote, seen through illusion. Seen through illusion. And it takes the intuition to see through illusion. And I use this phrase, says DK, in its esoteric sense. Then they are ready for the third initiation. And they see through the first phase of illusion, which is the worst kind of separativeness. And then they are no longer subject to the great heresy of separativeness. He tells us that is the one great heresy. You know, what heresy is wrong thought. So, you know, in the past age of Pisces, they were always heretics, and they were always being persecuted, and they thought their own way, and they didn't go along with the prescribed and limited mode of thought imposed upon religion by those who had rather little minds. Well, DK says all of those heresies don't really count at all. There's only one great heresy. It's the great heresy of separativeness. Now, I think maybe, you know, we're just getting started here. And I'm not going to go too far with this right now because there's maybe a lot to talk about, and then we'll get into our meditation. Our theme is, therefore, the theme of revelation. Now, you know, that's all tied in with initiation because every initiation is one revelation after another. And I would like to make some general remarks upon the subject because thereby the problem of world illusion can be clarified and incidentally individual illusion too, because all of our illusions are part of the great world illusion. So we're in the process of becoming disillusioned. And you know, oftentimes when we say that, we say, oh, I became so disillusioned, so disappointed, what I believed to be true was not true. And you know, and that's using the term disillusion in a very personal sense. We're using it in a technical occult sense that we no longer think with our concrete mind in a way that is subject to so much error and so much inability to receive the transmission of the soul as it actually is. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to say that this will be the end of our doggy readings, number 24. And today is the 18th of November, and resume here with number 25 on the day, well, I guess it'll be the 25th, at least the 25th of November 2016. This is really, really interesting stuff, and we have to think very clearly about how we think and how we react emotionally to what we think. And, you know, we've made a glamorous mess down here, and albeit it's been aided and abetted by the counterforce, but it's a mess, and the majority of people don't see through it, and I'm not saying that we do, but we're certainly going to try. We're going to try to see through our illusions. We're going to try to identify and dissipate our glamours. It's a long-term process. And as we work in this way and work with sanctioned formulas, we're going to help the world too. And there are many groups doing this, of course, but we'll be one of them and try to make progress as we go along. And concurrent with that, of course, must be the absolute augmentation of the Triangles Network. Now, you know, many of us have received impressions about the necessity of expanding and deepening the Triangles Network. Tuya has especially, I have also to a degree over the course of my life, always nagging in the back of my mind, triangles, triangles, triangles. It will allow us to break up so many of these distortions and make sure that they are underlay by the divine pattern, which is the triangle and which represents the soul. So all these things go hand in hand. All of our ask programs are all interlocking in their nature, and they all mutually support each other. And in these next 8-9 years, when we're literally fighting for the soul of humanity, and when the personality will have its tremendous recrudescence, and the sixth ray will try to go out in a blaze of glory that hopefully doesn't take everybody with it, you know, onto another world and leave the physical world behind and have to start all over again, we have to apply ourselves in a manner that is maybe more intelligent, more willful, more loving than we ever have before. And so we'll try to help with that with our series of programs. And we will encourage everybody who is a disciple or an aspirant or someone who really wants to serve humanity subjectively to work in these ways as well, and maybe, hopefully, we can make a difference. Excuse me. All right. That's a little time passed. So if you have any thoughts, any questions, responses, you know, we're most happy to give it a shot. Okay, so there's Gene, and hi, Gene, and make sure to unmute yourself, Gene. Press the I think it's a green button to make sure that your microphone is on if you wished to speak. Or you can also write a question or a statement if you prefer that. But right now you're on self-mute, so we would not be able to hear you until you unmute yourself. It looks like a little microphone, and then you can unmute yourself. Okay, well, maybe as soon as you figure that out, we're very happy to hear what you have to say, or you can write it down, whatever you'd like to do. But I think, Michael, you know how to do this, so there you go. And okay, Michael, you're on.
Okay. You talk about fighting for the soul of humanity, which sounds very Martian. Why don't we change that kind of thought to thinking for the soul of humanity, meditating for the soul of humanity?
It's all part of the fight. It's all part of the fight. Yeah, I want to show you something that's really funny, and you won't believe it, but because I know where you're coming from on this. I absolutely know. And, of course, look, as an Aries type, I am rather Martian, okay? But let's just see if I can find this. This is our nice Master DK. And this is a fantastic paragraph, okay? Listen to this. And, of course, this was World War II, but, you know, things could get a lot worse than that. He said it would be like child's play. So allow me to use certain words. To those who are standing in the blaze of pain, and their number are legion, of agony, anxiety, and distress, seeing it on every hand and attempting to stand steady in the midst of it all, I say, that which appears is not always that which truly is. that which rends and disrupts the personality life is frequently the agent of release, if rightly apprehended. That which will emerge when the forces of life have light have penetrated the world darkness will demonstrate the nature of the undying human spirit. To all of you I say, my love surrounds you, and the aura of the ashram of which I am the center stands like, I love this phrase, you know, it's one of those great phrases, stands like a great defending wall around you and around all who are battling for the right. Okay, there's the word, battling for the right. See that you battle. You can then, if you will, sense this loving protection. Each day, if you will, you can put yourself on rapport with the Master. We are not blind or uncaring. We know, however, that there are worse evils than death and pain. We know that this is the hour of humanity's greatest opportunity, and that if men can pass triumphantly, all these Scorpio things, right, through this, and by the strength of their own souls, surmount this very present evil, and it hasn't gone away, then the evolution of humanity will be hastened beyond all that was believed possible. It will constitute a release, self-achieved and self-initiated. This means as much in the life of mankind as it means in the life of the individual disciple. The chance and that opportunity must not be taken away from man. The gained spiritual and eternal values are of far greater importance than his temporary agony. So, you know, it all depends what we mean by battle, and I fully understand that it involves meditation, it involves the expression of love, it involves thought power, it involves everything, but these are the words he used. And I maybe used the cruder word, fight, but battle's pretty good too.
And what I really wanted to get into is an awareness of how and what we're thinking, because as we're told, thoughts are things, and I have believed that ever since I was a child. But how often are we aware of where our mind is taking us, how we are thinking, what we are thinking? Are we controlling that thought, or is it controlling us?
Well, that's why he calls this group, the group that we're, you know, kind of working with at this point, the trained observers of reality. You know, the whole idea of being able to see everything that we do from the thought, emotion, and etheric physical nature is indispensable, because about very many things we are unconscious, and we let the old patterns just take us where they will, and they have been created under conditions of ignorance deeper than we are in now. So we really have to observe, we have to see, we have to know what we're doing and where it leads. And all of this is part of what I call the battle, the fight for the soul of humanity. And we, of course, we use peaceful means. We don't use the Martian means where we just attack the other guy. No, we assert the good. And through the power of substitution, we banish the evil, and we assert the good constantly. So there are many, many ways to enter into this opposition between the soul and personality of humanity, and you cannot escape the interaction of this opposition, which is hard upon us right now, and which is still sponsored by the Black Lodge, which the door to where evil dwells was left slightly ajar, and they took advantage of that, the Tibetan tells us, and we have that contest, if you will, on our hands at this time. And self-knowledge is the basis of doing well. Okay, so I'll agree with you there, absolutely.
People can look at this as a really bad time, but from a different perspective, it's such a marvelous time to be of service in helping to lift the consciousness of humanity, which always is done through conflict.
Yeah, I guess we can't help it being a warring a kingdom. You know what happens on the fourth ray? There's a lower and the higher part of the fourth ray, and you have to have your conflict in order to achieve your harmony, as it seems to be no other way, at least at present, until we really are far more elevated. It's the nature of our whole planet, you know. So, yes, a time of tremendous opportunity, and none of us, you know, I speak to myself, of course, I have my bad days, must become depressed about the present situation and say, oh my God, the forces of separativeness and evil are really on the march, and what do we do, and people have so little understanding. As disciples, we know enough to do the right thing, both inwardly and outwardly, and this is, agreeing with you, our great opportunity. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Other thoughts, friends, either in written form? Yes, Brett, yes.
We have a comment from Suzanne in written form.
Okay.
The second one.
Can I not get it on? Okay. Suzanne, is it a question mark?
The second
one. Or is it? I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is. And why, I'm always in the same trouble. I can't ever make my questions appear. There. Did it appear? No? All right, Brett, you just read it. I'm not having
success. She says, even the archangels have their warriors, as in Michael with his sword.
It's a very true comment. Read up on what DK talks about when he talks about the war in the heavens. It's a real thing, and it really, it's a balancing of forces and energies according to the dictates of the divine plan in ever wider instances of that plan. There's a plan for the whole solar system, there's a plan for our cosmic logos, which has many solar systems, and in the process of adjustment, of adjusting these energies and rising out of ignorance, because even every planetary logos is in a state of relative ignorance, come these wars, these battles, these conflicts. So, H.P. Blavatsky has said that from one perspective, St. Michael, the Archangel Michael, is Saturn. Saturn is the great planet of discipleship and the great planet of opportunity. And, a lot of people try to avoid Saturn because it brings such stressful times when you have to face the music. If all of us as disciples can learn how to face the music, as it were, and face the karma and face realistically the situation under Saturn and the attenuation of the Saturnian force as it works its way down to our level, then we will be much more suited to win the battle for the soul of humanity. Okay, thank you, Suzanne. By the way, did you want to say something? Because I see your hand is raised. Did you want to say something, or is your question sufficient?
Thank you, Michael. I'll just add to that, the words of Jesus as the Christ saying, I come with a sword.
Yeah,
and
we
need to interpret what he meant by the sword, but he did mean he would have to do battle at some point and in some way.
Yeah, it's a very important statement. I come to bring not peace but the sword, and what the Tibetan tells us about that is the great sword of discrimination between soul and personality, between spirit and matter. It's the sword that allows us to see reality and discriminate. Yes, thank you, Suzanne. Tuya, go ahead, please.
Yes, Tuya. Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Make sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to the microphone directly. So anyway, just one quote from Externalization of the Hierarchy from the page 260. He says, the Prince of Peace will lead his people through war to peace. Those who think only in terms of peace as they understand it and desire it are apt to forget the biblical implication that the Prince of Peace takes a definite part in the battle or Armageddon, and now it is very interesting, he says, now in full progress. After achieving victory, he will then lead his triumphant cohorts through the gates into Jerusalem, the city of peace. The symbolic and practical significance of this is becoming increasingly apparent. The symbolic and practical significance of this is becoming event can and will take place when the free will of the people blended by invocation and prayer can make this possible. I think
Excellent.
These are very important yeah. things to ponder on deeper ways, because it is a dilemma in our minds when we are working in our meditations and we are reading his words and the soul is present or touches us and we see everything and the possibility how the peace is possible if we just want to will it. But then the what is the condition in the world? It is this issue that there are these forces now battling and we have to take a part in that.
We do. Absolutely. This is, you know, I was just reading this paragraph just yesterday, and it is so powerful, this idea of through war to peace. Remember the biblical prophecy that 1,000, yeah, of course it's symbolic, right? But 1,000 years of peace will settle down upon humanity, and quote-unquote Satan, in the lower sense of the word, will be bound for 1,000 years. And this means the triple personality will not have its way for that long period of time, and the Christ presence will rule. But of course, you know, before those things happen, he said, the forces of materialism, and these are his words, will fight to the last ditch to make sure that their way prevails, and that the new and better, the good way of hierarchy does not prevail. We're all part of that. We can't avoid it. And so the manner in which you will engage in the battle, in the conflict, in the contest, that's up to you, okay? But DK has given us some very good methods of struggling forward, helping the divine plan manifest. It's not going to be an easy time for any of us. If we're looking for peace in the usual sense, where it means sort of an undisturbed astral condition where everything is not non-threatening and fairly harmonious in a small scale, we're not going to find that. And if we do retreat into that, we're not doing our full share in the great opposition between the soul and the personality. Okay, thank you, Tuya. That was helpful. Other thoughts, friends, other questions that you may have? You know, I mean, this is a big study, this whole study of glamour and illusion, and it has to be practical as well. And we're trying to make it practical through our meditations. The whole theme of invoking a higher reality and making those energies practical and expressed, we're trying to do that in the general Ask Project and in our full moon meditations and special days and all that, all of these broadcasting things. This is of the utmost importance at this time, and we have to, well, no matter what our age may be or our condition or whatever, we have to engage in it to the full extent of our possibilities. Okay, other questions or thoughts? And we will understand more and more as we go along, you know. Don't despair. The Tibetan writes in a manner which is highly intelligent, highly learned, and which really cultivates not only the concrete mind, but the soul mind, the son of mind, and the abstract mind and the intuition. He writes in a way that cultivates all those aspects of mind which are ruled by Mercury. Mercury, the star of intuition, as it is called. So give ourselves time, and we will penetrate more and more deeply into his thought. We will be overshadowed by his thought. We will become outposts of the Tibetan's thinking, and we will notice our ability to understand, to receive, to interpret, to express. We will notice all those things increasing in power. We only have to have sufficient patience and persistence and the will to engage in this very, very strenuous period, which is the last period of the era of the Forerunner ending in 2025, when the definite plans will in all probability be laid for the first stages of the actual externalization of the hierarchy. Okay, we seem to have another hand here. Karen, and I'll unmute you there, and go ahead.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Karen.
I like the what you said, that we're fighting for the soul of humanity. That says in a nutshell what we're really doing, and I think it's something that most people can understand. You know, I really think it's something that if you want to encapsulate what we're doing, and that will touch people's hearts and minds, that might be it.
Yep, I think it's quite an image, and it is within the range of comprehension. And everybody knows there's a good side and a not-so-good side to the human experience, and the good side can emerge if we put our energies in the right place. So we have to, I think you're right, I think that's a good way to approach this with people that may not know so much about, you know, esotericism and all these things. I mean, how do we make sense out of this tremendous conflict that's going on everywhere? How do we make sense? And in a way, you know, if we tell them that that's what it's all about, maybe they will understand, and maybe we will understand more and more. Yeah, agreed on that. Anything else, Karen?
Well, I have a lot more, but I mean thoughts. But I think that we should meditate. I mean, just ideas about visioning the third party. I mean, that's kind of where I've been at. And you know, there's a local radio station, and I shared the books, one of the books the book Stephen Dynan wrote recently called Sacred America, Sacred World. Okay. And there's some very good information in there about visioning a new way of being in the world that, you know, see where it goes. I gave it to the radio station, and anyway, I'm going to see. I'm very interested in that idea of the third party, way of moving forward.
It is coming, you know. The new group of world servers is ruled by the sign Taurus, and we know that there's a triangle between the third eye and the two eyes, and most of us use for our vision the eyes which look from here to there, the right and the left, as it were, symbols of duality. But all of this can be resolved under Taurus into the single eye, into the Shiva eye, into the eye which doesn't just see conflict, but in the fourth-ray sense, fourth-ray Taurus, new group of world servers, you know, it moves on apace, and it sees the unity of the conflicting forces, and it synthesizes them into one thing. So I think that as the new group of world servers become stronger, as Taurus becomes stronger in the unitive sense, we're going to be in a position to begin to see the emergence of that party of humanity, as it were, that really deals not so much with conflict, but with the real emergence of a unitive new age, which will be of benefit to all. As servers, we have to more and more see the unity when it's so easy to see the conflict. And we have to have that as a kind of principle in our minds. How do all these things fit together in one greater vision which leads towards unity? It's a fourth-ray job. And the members of the new group of world servers are in a fourth-ray group. And the fourth-ray from this monadic aspect is coming in 2025. And it already began to make its presence in 1924, the Tibetan says. So we have new energies to support this more unitive vision, which will lead to the emergence of the unifying party, the third party, which will be all over the world, and we'll just be sick and tired of all the kinds of energy-wasting conflicts that we perpetually engage in, and perhaps we can really build something that will lead us into the Aquarian Age by the time we get to 2117. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Karen. Thank you. Now, let's see. Are there any other comments that anybody has or any questions before we get into our meditation? We know And look, you know, we're using the same meditation, and hatred, and separativeness. It's sort of the, you know, hatred is sort of the central head of the nine-headed hydra. Fear, hatred, and ambition. It's in the second series, and it's the fifth of the qualities that is mentioned. And it's all based upon the illusion of separativeness, and that the other guy is really the other guy and not you, you know. But remember DK's great second-ray mantra, naught is but me. It's so easy to forget, of course, and, you know, in our normal personality life, in our normal language, we may not talk that way, but really, naught is but me. One has to get into the state of awareness where one begins to realize that that is true. And when one really begins to realize that is true, that is going to be, however slight it may be, a touch of the monad. That's going to be a touch of the monad, which sees all things as one, is the central spiritual sun in the human being, is the higher correspondence of the eye of Shiva, naught is but me, and one has to work on that before it's really possible to realize it. And then for the people who have the single eye, the cyclopses of the world, you know, the initiates of the world, they will be a great force in bringing about this unifying third approach, which unifies the pairs of opposites. Okay, then, if there is any of our staff
we have
people backing us up. Yes, go ahead.
Brett. We have a comment from Debo.
Yes.
In fighting for the soul of humanity, could we come together specifically at any time global meeting is about to hold, focusing our united light at the soul and the center in process of forming?
I think there are those specific events, Debo, where people do come together, and some people have been, there's a lot of these unified group meditations. You know, special events where lots of people are involved in these things, and it's very, very good for these events to emerge. What I would suggest, however, is that we have an ongoing, persistent attitude of working subjectively in our individual manner, and then within the books and within our own meditations and within our learning of the teaching. We have many, many meditative opportunities being presented, both in your own individual work within the Moria Federation, let us say, for those students that are part of that, or other esoteric schools, and with small weekly events such as this is. And all of these meditative opportunities, whether individual or in a group, are part of one great world meditative opportunity. And it's ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. Nothing's going to be accomplished all at once. There are these grand collections of meditators that do occur, and thousands may be part of it, and something good may result from it. But for 9 years now, it has to be ongoing and persistent in little ways, in intermediate ways, in big ways. It's all one big group meditation with many instances of it happening. And we just have to persist in this, knowing that every time we do it, we're, you know, as Tuya tells that marvelous story about the little bird and the drop of water, you know, putting out the fire, which nobody else wanted to help with. We will do our job if we bring our little drop of water to put out the world conflagration, and instead bring in the true solar fire. And it won't be done all at once. It will be done a little bit at a time, constantly. And it's all part of one big meditation. Tuya, go ahead.
Yes, a continuation for that, and also about the drop. When we think about this, what DK says about the distinction between the aspirant and the disciple, is that the aspirant has the light on and off, on and off. And hierarchy needs and seeks those who can be on now all the time. So it means that it is this continuous work every day. I would like to remind about this importance of the triangle work, that at least one triangle would be for everybody that trying to get this, because that is the principle how the soul is able to work through. And it is also looks like that one kind of symbol for or tool for the higher ones, the Buddhas of activity, if the things comes very bad on earth, they can use these triangles. Maybe it is that they can release these kind of energies that individual is unable to carry, but this strengthening triangle work that we would have with our triangle or triangles would make the basic for these energies to come in. And I just want to add this drop thing that I, a few days ago when I was meditating during the full moon morning, I got this kind of image about one drop dropping into the chalice. And then I was trying to understand what does it mean, and then I realized that our drop can be that tiny little drop, which we don't see, we are only tiny, but when we add this into this collective chalice, this one drop can make that spiritual chalice to overflow. So let us keep that symbol in our minds, that never now lose any day that we are not putting our little drop into that chalice, because it may be the one drop that is needed.
Thank you, Tuya. There are, you know, every once in a while we're told it's all up to humanity. In one way it is, but every once in a while there are interventions, and there are even interventions which are not expected by the hierarchy. And in World War II, the result would have been much different if the Lords of Liberation in Shambhala had not intervened, and especially one of the Lords Liberation, and it was not expected by hierarchy, and yet it occurred. Now, in the same category, and even more arcane and more esoteric, might be at some point the intervention of the three Buddhas of activity. They are stupendous beings, relatively considered. They were planetary logoi in the previous solar system, so it gives you an idea about their scope. And we just have to prepare the vessel. And the vessel is the triangles network, which will allow the soul quality, which is dissipating glamour and dispelling illusion, to flow through the personality of all of humanity. So if we provide the vessel, we don't know the hour and the time or the emergency or whatever, there will be an intervention as necessary by the Buddhas of activity. I think I talked about that once. There was almost, in World War I, an intervention of the solar logos. Every time I read that, I just about fall on the floor, because that's the huge being who directs this whole solar system. So we have to prepare the vessel so that the intervention can occur if necessary. And we don't know whether it will be necessary. It's usually better if it's not necessary and that we handle it ourselves. Okay. All right, everybody. Let's have a little meditation. Excuse me. By now we're quite familiar, you know, and we're going along with this, and you know, not a long meditation, and when you're perhaps doing it yourself, it can be even shorter, but you can meditate with power even though there is a brevity. So a few moments of silence anyway. as we gather into one effective unit of service. And we're providing a field of impression that can be impressed by the higher potencies. And so, gathered together as we are, and with humility, realizing that there is danger in this work too, we sound the protective formula. And we say together, as a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. I will do that making the sign of the cross, according to DK's instructions, the center of the forehead, the center of the chest, the left eye, the right eye. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. We focus now the dual light of matter and of mind, and that's focused. It's the light of the etheric physical, and it's brought up into the mental body, mental plane, and the light of mind brought together, we visualize. This is vitality, and it is the light of intelligent apprehension. And now also, we meditate on soul contact, and we imagine that we recognize soul light. It's the light of the egoic lotus and the light of the presence of the solar angel within that egoic lotus as the angel of the presence. And then we fuse the two lesser lights within the mental body with the soul light. And we can think of it as the mental body of the entire group, and the soul of the group now meditating. The three lights are fused in our imagination. And we say together, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Then we say together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And our great searchlight in relation to these ideas is turned upon the astral plane. We invoke the spiritual will from the higher sources. Empowering each of us individually and the group and this is the will which sees the plan and the purpose into expression. We're going to empower our beam of light. And we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. We will name the glamour to be dissipated and utter the three words of power, visualizing the light penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. and as we penetrate into the glamour, producing its weakening and dissipation. We will take 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as we see imaginatively the work proceeding. And then we refocus ourselves upon the mental plane. We turn our attention away from the astral plane. We withdraw the beam, and it is the searchlight is imaginatively shut off. Seeing the work that is being done, we sound the Om 3 times. This is a process, friends. We are engaged in this process. It's ongoing, and we carry the sense of what we're doing. And before long, this beam, in an individual sense, can also be developed and can be used. The group beam is more powerful, of course, but the individual beam can be useful in our own lives and in our daily encounters. And we're on our way to bringing vitality, intelligence, the light of the soul, and the power of will all together to do this work of clarification, which is so needed in a world in which so many people don't come close to seeing what reality is. So we will persist, we will persist. Tomorrow, same time, we'll be working with invoking the souls of nations, the destiny of the nations approach. It'll be broadcast, and you can use the usual Ask Comprehensive link. We preserve that as the constant link. And join us for that, and then Sunday, attracting money for hierarchical purposes. So thank you very much for your presence and your work, and let us proceed. And as Mary Bailey used to say, we will move forward with all due deliberate speed. I'm reminded of the battleship Dreadnought. She was a real first rate. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. We'll be talking to you. Join us. And thank you for your presence and your work. Bye-bye for now.